Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery on Round Rock, where we talk about games, comics, and other stuff on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And let's go to the show for this week. All right, we are well into November here, which means still a lot of stuff coming up.
Yep, and temperatures may drop all the way to the 60s.
Yeah.
Yay.
There's going to be some 40s in there.
It's true.
The Gaming with Rogues is this weekend, this Saturday on November 14th. That is going to be playing Guillotine. And other games.
That's an unusual day for us. Saturday thing.
We usually do first the third Monday of the month, but for holiday months, we're going to do Saturdays.
It's getting crazy.
So that is this Saturday. Come out on Saturday night and play some games.
That's cool. They can say hi to the staffers and stuff while they're there.
You can play either Guillotine or other games. We do have a games library. And, of course, if you have a rogue card, you get 10% off on Guillotine the rest of this month.
Mm-hmm.
Then that Sunday, we're doing a demo of Snowtails, the dog racing game, which looks kind of fun. That is at 2 o'clock. And then next, the Saturday after that, November 21st, we are doing our big epic demo tournament. This is at 1:30, $5 entry fee. You get to keep your cards. I really like this game. I'm looking forward to the tournament. I hope we get a turnout for it. I've had a lot of fun playing it so far. Then, of course, November 27th is Black Friday.
What's that? What's that all about?
Which... Black Friday's been in the news lately. Of course, it's usually like people wanting Walmart and those guys not to be open on Thanksgiving, which we're not open on Thanksgiving. We'll never be open on Thanksgiving. We all like turkey too much.
We don't get up at like 4 a.m. for craziness the next
day. The deal on Black Friday is, as it has been for the last, 6 years since we invented
Perhaps even longer.
We started a Black Friday sale in response to a customer. This is sort of a random thing. I think maybe it was the first year I owned the store.
Yeah.
So maybe it was like 8 years ago. He sent a message to me. Like a couple weeks before, I was like, hey, are you guys doing anything for Black Friday? And I was like, we should do something for Black Friday. And so what we started doing is a basically every $25 you spend, you get a $5 gift certificate that you can then use as early as the next day if you want to come back and spend some more money. Or you can give those gift certificates out to people as bonus gifts.
Yep.
But if you want to get your holiday shopping started, you can do that on Friday, November 27th. And we'll be doing, as always, our $5 get – every $25 get you – $5 gift certificates, unless you have a rogue card.
What happens if you have a
rogue card? If you have a rogue card, it's $5 for every $20 you spend.
Yeah.
Now, you can buy a rogue card on the day, too.
Yeah.
Although your $35 membership will not count towards your total. We don't want people gaming the system quite that much.
Right. But you can throw a combo.
Yep, you can totally throw a combo. You can add $35 on top of your total and get some bonus gift certificates.
Yep.
So. Come on out. That'll be fun.
It's an exhausting day, but always a fun one.
Yeah.
You get a little bit of that free comic book day vibe.
Yep. Most of us will be here. You want recommendations? Pretty much all the staff will be cycling in throughout the day.
Yeah. I think we're going to hold off on the Christmas music until that day.
There'll be
some Christmas music sprinkled in amongst the craziness.
Yes.
After Thanksgiving.
That's right.
I went into a store just a couple days ago. And they already had decorated for Christmas and were playing Christmas carols. And I was like, this cannot stand.
That's not right.
You know, it's one of the nice things about being a small business. It's ain't no crazy overlord unless Crazy Randy does it that's going to force us to listen to holiday music.
I love Christmas, but I love Christmas in the Christmas time period.
Right. It makes it more special.
Yes, exactly. And then finally, on Saturday, November 28th, we'll have Local Comic Shop Day, which is a new event that is mostly focused on sort of variants and limited edition kind of things.
Yeah, there's actually some really cool stuff coming up.
Yeah, there's a variant for All New Wolverine.
Yeah.
There's a variant for Back to the Future number 1. There are the really cool sort of oversized Invader Zim and Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
The Bitch Planet hardcover, which is an exclusive.
Yep.
And I believe there's another exclusive from Black Mass Comics that we have not received yet, but should be getting soon. So, yeah, if you like to check out some of the variants, we'll have some of the very limited variants on sale on Saturday, November 28th. That is all the store news, but there is also a ton of other news to cover.
Such as.
Well, first of all, you guys, we've all been digging Supergirl.
Yes.
You two have seen the third episode. I have not seen it yet.
Yep.
I'm going to watch it tonight.
Did you watch the trailers for it?
No.
Okay.
And I'm not spoiling anything. I'm just saying that I think with every episode, they're finding more and more groove, and I like it better each episode. So,
And I thought this episode was good but not great, but it had great moments in it.
Yep. And they have cast... The DEO is a big part of the Supergirl, and the DEO actually was invented in a book called Chase.
Which stands for, by the way, Department of Extranormal Affairs.
Yep.
That's what DEO stands for, not Chase.
Yes. That'd be weird if that's what Chase stood for.
Weird acronym.
Department of Extranormal...
Oh, wait.
Activity.
It has to be an O.
External operations.
Operations. There yes. we go.
Yes, that'd be the DEA, which is a different thing.
Yeah, that's a different thing.
Anyway, they were originally in the show. They're sort of alien busters, but in the comics, they were the basically this superhuman metahuman thing.
Yeah.
And it was invented in a book called Chase, which was a short-lived book in the 90s. Had really gorgeous art by J.H. Williams, you might know from Promethea or from Sandman Overture. And written by a guy named Dan Curtis Johnson, who has since left comics, but who wrote a really fun book. Anyway, Chase focused on the DEO and an operative from the DEO named Cameron Chase, who was a female who was a like one of their big. She had a family history of superhumans, and she developed a power basically to shut down superpowers, and that was part of what the book was about.
Oh, I did not know
this
that.
Is a great book. I the trade paperback. I don't know if we still have it because it wasn't selling really well. I love it. I have the whole series. Anyway, Cameron Chase is going to be introduced into Supergirl.
I'm curious, just real quick, Randy, backtracking briefly to the comic, what was the overall tone of it like? It's sort of was it sort of suspense, you know, like sort of a little bit like Suicide Squad?
It was a little bit like Suicide Squad. In fact, Suicide Squad showed, this was when Suicide Squad was not a big property.
Right.
And
it was notable that they
showed up. They showed up in a couple issues, yeah.
But it was sort of like behind the scenes, like sort of like almost like FBI stuff dealing with superheroes.
Yeah, it was X-Files-ish.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I was just trying to figure that out. Gotcha.
Anyway, Cameron Chase is going to be on Supergirl, played by Emma Caulfield, you might remember from Buffy.
As Anya?
As Anya, yep. Dave's favorite character.
Yes.
The joke there is that Dave hated Anya.
I didn't hate Anya.
Were you not happy when she died?
I was not happy when she died.
Oh, okay. Spoilers for Buffy.
She
was a good character.
I liked Anya. Dave did not like when she became... Dave felt about Anya the way I felt about Spike, I believe.
Actually, no, it was more like I felt she was... I didn't mind her getting together with Xander. It was... I thought she was just kind of one note.
Yeah.
You know, she was kind of always the snark princess.
Sure.
Demon snark princess.
Yep.
But in a different way than Cordelia.
Yeah, in a different way than Cordelia. Hers was more in a demonic, don't quite get these humans, you know...
She was like a demon Data.
Yeah, there you go. Demon Data. We'll go with that.
Who really hated bunnies.
So, we'll...
No, she was scared of bunnies.
That's true. I guess that's still kind of hate.
Hate is different. She was scared of them.
Okay, fine.
All right, people. Back on point of order. So she's going to be in the
show. So anyway, Emma Caulfield is playing Cameron Chase, who in this show will be an FBI agent.
Right. I think they were making out she's going to be kind of a hard ass.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that fits Chase's character.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely.
Thing. Okay.
I'll be curious to see if she gets recruited into the DEO. If they bring her in, or if she's going to be an outsider.
I bet early on, at least, she's probably just going to be an outsider who's bumping heads with the DEO recurringly.
Yeah, I would guess so, too. But that's kind of cool. I like the casting. I like the character. So, mm-hmm. Also, speaking of TV, although CW, not CBS, you guys might have noticed that John Constantine was on Arrow.
Right. Yeah. I heard this. I did not see it because I haven't watched it in a while.
Right. But Nick did. You watched it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I watched it.
I liked it. I thought they did a good job with it.
Yeah.
I thought his role in the show was good. I like Matt Ryan's always been a good Constantine.
Yes.
But what's interesting is Arrow got a huge ratings jump off of this.
Mm-hmm.
And now there are fans petitioning to have a CW Constantine show.
That's, you know, we were talking about this last Sunday. I guess when the show got canceled on
NBC,
they gave up rights or whatever, clearly?
Something, yeah. We don't actually know, but they don't have the rights to it or something, yeah.
And so, I guess it's a possibility.
Or for all I know, CW, you know, CW is partly Warner Brothers, so maybe it was produced by Warner Brothers. NBC didn't have any rights necessarily, but Warner Brothers Productions does.
Well, it fits the CW mold. He's a good-looking guy.
Yep.
He probably will look good with his shirt off.
Well,
you know, Supernatural's going to end one of these days.
Well, the other thing is, I mean, I'd love to see Constantine crossover with Supernatural. I think that'd be fun. Anyway,
it would be fun. Throw Arrow in for the mix.
One of the notable things is that low ratings on NBC are huge ratings for CW.
It's true.
So for NBA ratings, Bruce, is not a big surprise. The other thing, and this is just a rumor I heard from somebody, so take it with a grain of salt, but I heard that maybe it wasn't necessarily just the low ratings, but that someone at NBC didn't want a Supernatural show.
Yeah.
Like, that they just it didn't fit with their idea of the brand.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about that and how they might worry that, you know, if people start kind of getting into that notion, they might be like, let me go check out this Supernatural people are talking about.
Right.
And next thing you know, they're watching CW.
Or maybe they just didn't want to get into witchcraft.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be. That John Constantine.
Yeah.
That is some serious witchcraft stuff with John Constantine.
Yeah, that's true.
I will be pleasantly surprised if CW does end up making a show.
I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if that was the plan. To bring him in on Arrow, and if it does well, to go ahead and launch it on Constantine.
They obviously weren't expecting those numbers.
I don't know if they were or they weren't. I mean, I think there's probably a reason beyond ML campaigning for it why they brought Constantine on to Arrow.
At least partially it seemed to be because when he campaigned a little bit, people really liked that idea, and they might have been kind of running with the goodwill thing.
I'm curious if they'll change it up any, or if they'll sort of just kind of run with what NBC was doing.
Oh, I suspect they'll change it up. I suspect it'll be more in line with what Supernatural does, that kind of thing. Although, I guess that's what NBC was doing.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, are they going to make him more of a bastard?
Oh,
are they gonna...
one thing. Remember NBC had the thing where Constantine couldn't smoke?
Yeah.
The first thing you see when he shows up on Arrow is him putting a cigarette out on the street.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. That's
it was a total nod.
That's and kind of a finger.
Yeah.
It was kind of an FU.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that was what makes that doubly awesome. That's such a Constantine thing to do.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question, having not seen the episode. Did it just bring magic in there?
Oh, they've been bringing magic this season.
Yeah, the whole season
Who else has had magic?
The big bad, Damian Dark, is magic.
Oh, is he? Okay.
And they're definitely doing a super... They're bringing... Just like Flash brought metas into the season, this is them bringing the Supernatural in. They're expanding the DCU.
I kind of liked all of the Arrow... Team Arrow's reactions to the notion of magic. Everyone were very dismissive about it.
Well, that's
until
they
experience.
Did they kind of freak out about it?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's a little bit outside of even their experience.
I mean, there was also
humans.
A big event in this episode that happens.
Yeah.
Sort of furthers the Legends story. So,
yeah.
Interesting. That's cool. I'm glad that came off. I honestly would not have necessarily expected it to, but when I saw... When they showed this season on Arrow, and you know, I saw Constantine in that flash, that little trailer.
Yep.
I was like, "That's cool." I mean,
well, the thing
cool.
is, it's an expansion, just like Flash brought in metas. This brings in Supernatural, and slowly but surely, they are turning that entire TV verse into the DC universe. Yep. I mean,
now
they've
I want
got
to
everything
Flash
now.
Going up against mysticism.
Oh, I think we will. I mean. Hawkgirl.
I was
going to
say, bring
days.
In Abracadabra.
But Abracadabra is science.
That's true. He's crazy, like 83rd
Super
century
future,
science.
Yeah. But Hawkman and Hawkgirl. If they're playing them at all with the resurrection thing, is going to have a supernatural element
true,
to it. So I think that's really interesting because I don't think they're going with the space alien thing. I think they're going to go the reincarnation.
Yeah. Probably a good idea to save the space alien stuff
for Supergirl.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well,
I just want them to bring in Supergirl.
Network.
They will. I really think Supergirl's doing well, and I think that that's going to result in them crossing it over and having a.
Some
cool
CBS.
Because then aliens can be in that universe too.
Right.
Yeah.
It would be a nice way
do
to do it.
Do you think CBS and CW can play nice together?
I believe the baseline is there for it. I think it was not ruled out at any rate. So
it's still kind of funny to look and see how kind of like it's working really well, but it's such a weird ass backwards way to sort of bring like Constantine of you know coming into the TV verse through a Green Arrow show.
Yeah,
like on the surface, it sounds bizarre, as did Flash.
Yeah.
At the time,
it is weird that the Green Arrow is the center of the DCU and the TV, but. He's so Batman that it's basically like Batman is the center of the universe.
Batman
that
makes complete sense.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
The weirdest thing, and I think Greg Berlanti, the producer, mentioned this, that the weirdest thing if they were to do a Supergirl crossover is having to explain why no one at Arrow has ever mentioned Superman ever.
Right. And Supergirl, they kind of... They seem to fairly... She says at some point, like she's like, now there's two heroes in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it pretty clear only her and Superman.
Yeah. But that could be because
they're heroes. The others are vigilantes.
Yeah. So
right. Yeah. You could talk your way out of it.
You could fudge it. I just don't know if they're gonna.
Yeah.
But I would hope so.
Oh, you have to.
Last bit of TV news. Jeffrey Dean Morgan has been cast to play Negan.
Negan, I think.
Okay. He's one of the big bads in Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Apparently, very much beloved by the
Governor
Walking Dead
2.0.
fans. Yeah, he's even more vicious than the governor, I believe.
What?
Yeah,
governor
he's
was so vicious.
He's like a. I mean, the governor at least like had his daughter or whatever. I believe there's nothing human about Negan. I think he is basically a sadistic character. Basically,
sounds great.
Yep. Anyway,
you know,
Jeffrey Dean Morgan is great. I think he'll be a good guy to play the bad guy. The interesting thing to me about this is that there had been rumors, and I guess they were from the actors, if this is to be believed, that both John Hamm of Mad Men and Garrett Dillahunt from Everything, roughly, had sort of thrown their hat publicly in the ring, which I think is interesting because I think either of those guys would have been great casting, but I'm also thinking, poor Jeffrey Dean Morgan now, if he doesn't nail it, is going to always be compared to, oh, they should have gotten that guy.
You know, I feel like I don't. I haven't read the comic in a long time, and so I don't remember what Negan's personality is, other than I watched the scene where he I will not spoil it, but notably kills a cast member.
Oh, okay.
I flipped through a few issues around there, and he was a scary dude, and I feel like he's the kind of scary, kind of sort of sadist. I feel like, what's his name, Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Harry Dean Stanton is a different guy.
Yep.
I feel like he could probably pull off this guy's particular brand of creepiness.
Yeah. I think so, too.
I don't think he actually will be too much at risk in this.
No. I'm always bummed that Garrett Dillahunt... I will always say Garrett Dillahunt should be in the show. Like, and actually John Hamm, too. Either one of those, they should find a way to get them into Walking Dead. I think both those guys...
I kind of want them to do other things.
Oh, I do, too. But the nice thing about Walking Dead is you can do it for a season, then you get killed off, and then go do something else.
Bring in John Hamm just as a random zombie.
Yeah.
That's a good-looking zombie.
Or just as a guy who gets killed in that episode. Because if you bring him in, there'd be this big thing about how John Hamm was in Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And then if you set him up as like a new like counterpoint to Rick, and then he gets killed at the end of the episode, it'd be amazing.
It'd be pretty funny.
Okay. Switching gears a little bit, and a little bit of sad news. You guys may not know the name Daniel Fleetwood, or you might. But
at least heard the story, though.
But Daniel Fleetwood died, I believe, today.
Yeah, I think so.
He was terminally ill. But he is the guy who got to see Force Awakens early.
The Star Wars fan who, I don't know if he particularly petitioned or if people did it on his behalf.
I think his wife may have petitioned for him.
The word got out he would really like to before he goes see the new Star Wars movie.
And J.J. Abrams and Lucasfilm made it happen. They brought it to his house.
Because I hadn't heard this. When I heard he had died today, I was like, my God, did he get to see the movie?
No, like last week the news came out and they went through. They ignored the potential for spoilers, which is good. It would have been awful if they'd said, well, we don't want you to spoil our movie. And then the guy died.
Yes.
But... no danger of spoilers, but his wife basically...
In the internet age, I guess it's
sure, he could have been a dick. He could have gone online and posted the whole thing. But they I'm glad they trusted him and that he got to see that before he died.
Yeah, I saw a sweet photo floating around today of his wife doing sort of a final selfie with him, probably when he was pretty clear the end was near.
Yeah.
But they both looked happy together, and, who knows how much was genuine human empathy and how much was PR on Disney's part? But they did the right.
They did the right thing.
I think J.J. Abrams is a pretty nice, down to earth guy. Probably
sure. Yep. It's just there's a billion. It's going to be $1 billion property.
Yeah.
They seem to have made the right call.
Yeah, I'm glad they did. And rest in peace, Daniel.
Yep.
Switching gears to video game type stuff, sort of. The Warcraft trailer hit.
Oh right. We talked about this the other day, Ryan, and I have new information to add.
Oh, okay, new information, yes.
That's right.
There are orcs in it.
Nick, did you watch it?
I did watch the trailer.
Okay. I thought it was pretty decent, but didn't wow me.
So having never played a single minute of the game.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
I also have never played a single minute of the game.
Not Warcraft? Like World of Warcraft?
I played Warcraft back
Yeah, you played Warcraft.
Days, yes.
Nope, I've never played a single game of the day. Of course I am.
I love Warcraft. I played Warcraft 1 through 3.
The town was under attack.
I played a year worth of... I'm going fucked. See, Dave was testing my reflexes where I have to...
Randy just ran out the door.
I have to jump up and build a barracks.
Job's done.
I played World of Warcraft for like a year until I realized I didn't have the time and money to keep up with World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
But
every time
anyway...
one of these things, it kind of like hits the news... The fantasy geek in me is kind of like, maybe I should try it.
I have a huge fondness for World of Warcraft. My kids play it now a little bit.
So, describe to me, because the trailer was a little loose on the story. Is it sort of humans versus orcs?
An orc is going to team up with a human.
Humans versus orcs are two totally different things. They hate each other.
Yes.
But there's this one orc trying to get everyone together to fight a bigger
Yeah. I don't know what this threat is, but what I did not understand is I thought this was clearly an adaptation of the World of Warcraft game. It seems that it's set in the Warcraft initial game world, where really a lot of the other races, which I guess in the MMO were on other continents and were kind of slowly brought in, you know, with expansions and stuff, genuinely weren't really known about or didn't have a huge role. So this movie is actually sort of set before all those other races showed up.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So the one complaint I had about the trailer was sort of that it was, a little bit overly serious for a game that I know has a sense of humor.
Yeah.
Although I know the lore is serious, but
it's
always had a sense of humor whenever I hear about it. And also I was like, this is a whole fantasy world like D&D filled with monsters and stuff, and yet I only saw orcs and humans in the trailer.
Yeah.
And that seemed a little... there was a little bit of letdown. I wanted to see some more monsters.
Now, the thing is, I played the original Warcraft, and it was very orcs and humans. I think there might have been goblins,
right?
Like that helped the orcs,
or
and there
were trolls.
And
maybe.
I think there were dwarves that were on the humans. So there were units that you could build.
Right. Yeah, I think the dwarves blew stuff up.
But yeah, and that every Warcraft game added a few things. Like yeah. The goblins became really important in Warcraft 2 or 3.
Well, I was just thinking, if this is a success,
yeah,
and they do a little sort of Avenger style teaser at the end for like some, one of the other races, you yeah. know, and if they do it in a cool way,
yeah.
It could lead to a kind of cool Avengers-style tumble-down of, you know, subsequent movies.
Yeah, well, because World of Warcraft 2, the game,
yeah.
I believe that was when they introduced
That's
the
undead. Came in on it,
That introduced
way.
The undead. And the right. undead were, like, the big threat. And if they did that, that'd be awesome. And then the third brings in the Burning Legion, these sort of demons from the sky, mm-hmm. which forces everyone to sort of unite against them. And, like, there were some good stories in those, as I recall. I liked all that stuff, so...
Yeah. I remember them having, yeah, solid stories, and I know that the lore is very deep on
yeah.
the game. I was talking about it a little bit with Jose the other day, and he filled me in on some stuff. And it was interesting to see how, you know, there's enough lore in it that the same way fans speculate about, like, you know, the Marvel movies,
right.
and you know, or Game of Thrones, even.
Yeah,
there seems to be that level of speculation about, oh, what do we think is happening with this? Why are they bringing these characters in with the next expansion?
Yeah.
And they will kind of speculate at the level of depth that I would say, like, Game of Thrones is.
Yeah.
Out.
Well, I think, I mean, that may be one of the good things, Dave, is that if they are starting off, so it could be a good thing that only do orcs and humans, that they're going to set their right. baseline and then expand from there so that when World of Warcraft, when Warcraft 8 hits, that right. that movie hits, then they can introduce Pandaria and all that stuff, you know?
Right, right. They don't want to scare off the mainstream audience too quickly with elves.
or do the Batman thing where they bring in four villains, you know, where you're trying to service like eight races in one movie.
Right.
It's probably better to sort of roll it out a little slowly. Also, the important thing is... it looks great.
Right, so yeah, it looks pretty stunning.
The effects look great. And the director is Duncan... What's his name?
Duncan something.
Duncan...
Duncan, son of David Bowie.
Zoe Bowie.
Yeah, guy who directed Moon,
yep.
Source Code, and at least one or two other movies.
Yeah. So there's a good pedigree here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like... You know, it's interesting. Moon is like an indie sci-fi movie.
Yep.
Source Code is like a pretty mainstream sci-fi action thriller.
Yeah.
And so he doesn't seem to be completely pinned down other than he's generally had a hand in genre stuff.
Yeah.
But he seems like he does kind of smart genre stuff. Mm-hmm. I was a little disappointed, though. I mean, the movie really just gave you the idea that there's some big threat and that these two guys are going to have to team up.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's a cool idea, but it didn't have a lot of moments that I thought were like, oh, this is a really great moment. I really want to see this movie.
Yeah. I'm anxious for it just because I have a huge fondness for Warcraft. And I thought it was a solid trailer.
And I like fantasy crap, and so yeah. I'm almost certain to see it unless it just, like, is terrible.
And Nick sees everything, so...
I mean, I'll probably see it. I didn't go see The Last Witch Hunter, so...
Did you not?
I didn't.
I am shocked.
I'm going to go see it at probably the dollar.
It's a Vin Diesel fantasy movie. I was sure you'd be in there.
I know, and that's
kind of... Vin Diesel was Cage, Randy.
That's actually true.
Nick, did your wife not want to see it?
No, actually, she was going to buy tickets to it.
Wow.
I was like, eh, I don't really want to see it right now.
Have Diesel and Nicolas Cage ever been in the same movie?
I'm almost sure they have.
I don't think they should have,
but they need to go and make that
happen.
That
needs to happen.
they need to have a weird kind of bromance team up.
Nicolas Cage should be the bad guy in the next Fast and Furious.
How about this? Nicolas Cage is the human, Vin Diesel is the orc, and we recast Warcraft right now.
That sounds
Tango
great.
And Cash.
Yes.
Yes. Oh, remake Tango and Cash, but with Vin Diesel.
I believe Tango, the Warcraft game movie is sort of a remake of Tango and Cash in fantasy times.
Yeah. No.
Can it be a remake of Running Scared?
Yeah, sure. Whatever you need, Randy.
You have to get a Tango and Cash.
Are there any notable actors in the Warcraft movie?
Probably, but I don't know
if
anybody
there were.
Is.
I didn't recognize.
I mean, they're mostly there's handsome human guy, and then everybody else is CG.
Yeah,
I was gonna say, heavily CG. Completely,
it looks like
so.
It's except for the humans.
Yeah,
yeah.
I saw people happy to see that they kept the big old crazy shoulder pads and
yep,
stuff, which
yep.
is a very video game and also like Warhammer 40K thing. So I sort of appreciate that level of robust fantasy.
Right. Finally, speaking of Blizzard, the guys who make the Warcraft game, a little while back we reviewed one of their trailers for their new video game, Overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
Which looks to be sort of a superhero elements. You know, it's like there's definitely superhero
sort of
sci-fi.
And pulp archetypes.
Yeah, yeah.
Because there's a man with no name character type.
Yeah, and there's a lot of Japanese, like a ninja and samurai and
yeah.
that kind of stuff. Well, they released a second trailer. There's sort of a gameplay trailer, along with a lot of the flashes and shows the characters and stuff. And I'm curious about Overwatch. I think the world looks great. I thought the cinematic trailer was great, but the gameplay here seems to be sort of Team Fortress-y. I guess it's 6 versus 6.
Oh, is it?
It's not like massive multiplayer. It's 6 versus 6 team play, and each character has their own roles and different weapons and that kind of stuff.
It does. It definitely, like, visually, it looked like, and it reminded me of Team Fortress, both for its strong character design.
Yeah.
A sense of humor.
Yeah, there's a bit of a sense of humor, and certainly there's those roles, you know.
Yeah.
This guy clearly is the gadget engineer type person. This guy clearly is a heavy weapons guy.
Yeah.
This dude clearly is like a fast scout type character.
Yeah.
But it looks like everybody kind of had some surprises up their sleeves, too.
Yeah, and we talked about there's some weird power. Like, somebody has, like, time travel powers, and we're not sure how that works in the multiplayer scenario, but...
Yeah, I can't quite imagine how it works other than, like, sort of teleportation. Well, or, like, blurring effects.
Well, the thing is, Blizzard is, in addition to always doing great world design and artwork and all that stuff, they are good at games.
Yeah.
Like, they're the ones who are sort of famous for delaying games rather than shipping them unfinished, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, I imagine that there's going to be some new twists in this approach to the 6v6 multiplayer kind of thing.
If I'm not mistaken, they're also going to be doing, like Team Fortress, they're going to be doing shorts with the characters, like cinematic shorts. And maybe even, like, some comic stuff?
Maybe so. I don't know.
I thought I heard that somewhere.
They should.
It could be just digital stuff,
Now, this is going to be PS4?
Now, that was the other thing. I thought this was going to be PC only.
Right.
But the ad, it says it's only on PS4 and on Xbox One.
That definitely makes it more likely that I'll play it.
I'm almost certain to buy it now. I mean, I wouldn't have messed with PC. I just don't do PC gaming anymore. But I will absolutely buy a PS4 version. Even though the genre is not my favorite game genre.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, I played Team Fortress 2 primarily on the Xbox, or actually exclusively on the Xbox. I know that it had a billion more options on the PC and more mods and levels and stuff like that. But the honest truth is, I don't play so much that I want to throw myself into that depth of the game.
Yeah.
I was fine with playing on the levels that exist.
Yeah, I think what I want is to have enough friends, like with Battlefront, which is what I'm hoping for, is have enough friends where I can go and play this game with friends who know how to play it.
You want to shoot people you know.
Instead of playing with 10-year-olds with faster reflexes who spend hours on the game so that they can just shoot me from behind before I can do anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm hoping for, is more friends who can play this game. And
I gotta say, the character designs all seem neat. Did any particularly jump out at you, Randy? It's like, I want to play this one.
No particular character. I'm like, that one looks... Yeah, that all looks fun.
I have to say, the man with no name guy looked pretty slick.
Yeah, that was good.
Six shooters, I think. Mm-hmm.
I did like the Japanese girl who shows up and summons in a mech and then jumps out of it. And that was kind of fun.
A lot of their designs are really cool. It almost looks a little bit like Big Hero 6.
Yeah. But it looks like fun, and I'm excited that it's going to be on PS4. All right, that about wraps up our news for this week. We'll be back in just a few seconds to talk about comics for the week. We're talking comics for Wednesday, November 11th, and it's another big week.
It really is.
I had so many books to read this week that I usually when we wrap for the podcast, I feel like I've covered the main ones I wanted to read, and I can read the others later on in the week as time permits. Here I had like 6 or 7 books left, and I'm like, I wanted to read all of it.
Well, there's Marvel Relaunch, there's a new Image book, there's several new Image books actually. There's a couple of our Image favorites returning for new story arcs.
Yep.
There's a lot of stuff, and we're gonna get to it. So let's start off with Nick. Nick, what are your picks this week?
Start with me.
Yeah, he wasn't ready.
I wasn't.
He doesn't know what he want. What he liked.
No. Actually, I do know what I like.
He's panicking.
Dear God, I'm panicking.
I'm narrating a completely different world than what's actually accurate.
It's alligator world.
Alligator world.
No, I want to talk about All New Wolverine #1, which, of course, it's a Marvel book. I have to talk about it.
Yep.
My cheater pick is a Marvel book, too.
I just got to ask, Randy, before we get fully going here, my pick is a Marvel book this week. Did you bow down?
My pick is also a Marvel book. Nick's cheater pick is. Your cheater pick and my cheater pick are Image this week, though, Dave.
Yeah, so. we're not total sellouts like me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm okay with it. That's fine.
Are you getting paid from Marvel?
I would love that. No. This is All New Wolverine #1, written by Tom Taylor.
Yep.
Who, if you've heard us talk about him on the podcast with...
Injustice, Superior Iron Man.
We've expounded upon his goodness as a writer.
He's a rising star, and deservedly so.
Yep.
Art is by David Lopez and David Navarot. I'm probably butchering
is it
that.
Two artists?
It's probably...
Probably Inker.
Inker.
Okay. Sometimes they break up how they credit that a little bit broadly.
But that is how it's credited. They are both
as
on
I was
art.
Reading it, it looked to me like David Lopez's stuff, which is a very good thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love David Lopez's art.
The art in this is just gorgeous. And, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Laura or X-23.
Oh, but you even said that Wolverine is not traditional Logan.
Nope, it is. X-23 is taking on the Wolverine role.
Yes. And I'm not the world's biggest fan of hers, but I've liked her. But I do like to see the natural evolution of her taking the role of Wolverine and sort of the close relationship that she had with him, sort of not unlike the Jubilee or the Shadowcat. Yeah.
Wolverine likes young girls.
He does.
It's true. He likes to help them with their troubled past.
It's kind of true. For those who don't know,
Wolverine likes young, vulnerable girls with troubled past.
Nothing predatory about that.
Don't make it creepy, Randy.
For those who don't know, X-23 was cloned from Wolverine's DNA.
Yep,
she was.
But I think they only had the X chromosome.
The X chromosome. So there's,
they had to make it a female.
Yep. She first showed up in, I believe, NYX, wasn't it?
Yep.
She's been through some heavy stuff.
Yep.
She has. She's been used as sort of an assassin. But nowadays, she's sort of her own person, trying to find her groove as the new Wolverine. And in this one, she's trying to stop an assassination plot in Paris.
Yeah, I love that they just drop us into the middle of it.
Yeah, it feels very much like a Bond opening
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Yep.
And it's really good because she's just, you know, she's not in full costume at the beginning. And she's really just trying to be the superhero, which is kind of cool.
Yep. Yeah, if Bond could be shot in the head and recover from it, then that's what this would be like.
And that, I do want to mention, they do kind of play that up. Her healing factor is a big thing.
Yeah.
And they show it really well. There's a sequence, though, when she gets shot in the head that I think is one of the coolest sequences of the book.
Yeah, it is really cool. I thought it was nice.
It sort of speaks to her character and sort of, you know, like I was saying, the relationship she had with Logan.
Now, I want to say, I've not read most of this stuff because this is all from X-Force and Uncanny X-Force and all that. I haven't read any of this. I vaguely know of X-23, but there was no point at which I was like, what's going on here? What's happening? They do a really good job making this a jumping on point.
Yeah, Tom Taylor does a great job of doing that.
Overall, I've got to also credit, I suspect, some sort of behind-the-scenes Marvel editorial planning for this whole relaunch.
Yeah.
The stuff I've read has been largely very accessible.
Yeah.
And
I will also say there is a lot of continuity between the books. Just sort of interconnectivity, because there are things that are happening in one book are referenced in other ones.
It's kind of like that Star Wars continuity, where it's a neat bonus if you're there for it, but you're not like, I need to go read something else.
Is there a connectivity in this one? There's nothing in here
there
that connects.
There actually is.
Really?
In her counter, the person who shows up to help her is actually going to be part of another book. Where she shows up as well.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. I loved... She's talking to somebody who's sort of obviously her handler or her operations person.
Mm-hmm.
And when they reveal who it was, I was like, oh, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, we're not going to spoil that.
The action is super heavy in this book.
Yes,
there's
the
super
action
cool
is great.
Action.
She gets to do so many cool things. She's, you know...
She's great at this. In addition to the fact that his... I think the way he handles character and emotion is really strong.
Yeah.
So the there's a sequence where she's remembering, you know, a conversation with Wolverine, and that's very emotive.
Yeah.
And I also like that Wolverine's hair looks kind of like the classic Wolverine spiky hair.
Right.
Yep.
But his art's beautiful.
It's beautiful. He captures everything you need.
It's a little Cameron Stewart-ish. You
know, yeah. Kinda yeah. Cool. Totally.
There's some great splash pages. Feels like, you know, Laura is accomplishing a lot in this book. She's not a chump or anything.
And there's a cool team up with another mutant.
Yes.
Yep.
Don't
spoil. Yep.
And there is sort of a teaser at the very end of something
for
much
the bad
larger,
guys, yeah.
Going on behind the scenes. So I think this is a great first issue.
It is
accessible. It's fun. It's got action. And it's got sort of the Wolverine qualities that you want. So... I'm really excited to see where the series goes.
Glad to see Tom Taylor not dropping the ball.
No,
I suppose in his rising star status.
I think he doesn't go for the easy story. I think he kind of great dialogue. Mm-hmm. You know, he thinks about it, so it's not going to be what you expect.
And also, this is one of those Marvel's doing several of these double sized issues, so it's $4.99, but it does have a pretty huge page count.
It's a big book.
That is the same case with my pick. which is also a $4.99, although it is a two-story thing. There's like a backup and a lead. And that is All New, All Different Avengers, number one. We have already sort of promoted this book a little bit when the number zero came out. Yeah. Nick and I both really liked it.
Free comic book day.
Yep. But you don't need to have read that to read this. This is a... there are two stories, both written by Mark Waid, who we love from his work on Daredevil and other things.
And everything else.
The artists are on the lead. It is Adam Kubert, and the backup is Mahmoud Azrar, and they're both great.
I don't know Mahmoud, but his art was rocking the house.
Dynamo 5 and...
Yeah, and he moved over to DC.
And there's a reason why it's Dynamo 5 those two artists, because they're going to be handing off after every arc.
Yeah. Anyway, this opens with the all-new Captain America sort of doing some stuff where he saves some people. There's a fun thing with him and Iron Man. And the sort of central story of the opener is that the Avengers are gone. Like, Tony Stark has sold off Avengers Tower. There's Sunspot's team that's sort of unofficial Avengers. There's the Cap's team is officially the Unity team. So there isn't really an Avengers, which is how I've felt since Bendis took it over, actually.
So
I kind of liked that reinforcement of my feelings about the Avengers.
But that's sort of the connectivity that I'm talking about. It's like they're referencing those things.
Yes, they are. And again, it's a way that it's in a way that you don't have to have read anything, because I haven't touched an Avengers book in years.
In fact, when I was talking about this with you, Randy, what I liked is that Tony and Sam They talk about kind of what's going on, and it's actually kind of a neat, here's the state of the union for the Marvel Universe. Real quick, it's not like it is like this long conversation.
Right, right.
But I was like, oh, that's neat. You get to kind of get a quick sense of where things are.
Yep. Also, Miles Morales features pretty heavily in this opener, and it's great, and he's fun. Some of my favorite stuff, and I won't give away too much, but there are some great moments with Cap and Iron Man at the beginning. There's almost like a rivalry between the two of them, or a... buddy cop type friendship, sure. where they sort of needle each other.
Cap and Steve Rogers, Cap and Iron Man had their antagonism, and this is kind of that without the weight of Civil War behind it.
But there's a great bit where Stark says, get in the car, I'll give you and your eagle a lift, and Sam gives him a look, and he's like, Red Wing's a Falcon, you know this. And Tony says, an eagle would be better branding. And I loved that.
Very,
I thought that was...
Very, very on target for both of them.
Yeah. The bad guy they use is kind of a cool bad guy. I wasn't familiar with him. Clearly, he came from another book. But that opening story is really fun and sort of sets up what I want from Avengers, which is a team coming together story. A big bad shows up. You need more than one person to take him on, and they're going to set up a superhero team.
A little bit of infighting, nothing too obnoxious.
Yeah. But then there's the backup story, and the backup story is Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, meeting the new young Nova, Sam Witwick? No. What's his name? Sam something. I don't know. Anyway, two teen heroes meeting each other, and it does this great thing where they're both sort of talking to each other as their hero personas, and then using captions we're seeing inside their head, and... They basically just rub each other the wrong way, and they're both feeling bad about it, but neither of them sees what the other one's thinking.
Yeah.
And it's really fun and cute and sets up it's a great sort of first meeting between these two heroes. If you like either of those books, you're going to love this story.
I was going to say, Mark Waid definitely captures the vibe of both what Nova is about and what Ms. Marvel.
Yep.
Well, I haven't been reading Nova, but I really enjoyed reading that sequence.
Yeah.
Again, like you said, you don't have to know anything about these characters to kind of enjoy what's going on.
I really loved this book. And in a strong week for me, this was easily my favorite. It's a lot of fun. It does what Waid always does, which is building on the Marvel Universe without you feeling lost.
Right.
Being kind of old school without being dated.
Mm-hmm.
And just being a fun book. Dave, what is your pick for this week?
All right, my Marvel whoredom
is
something I did not was not even on my radar, honestly, but I just really enjoyed this first issue. It is the Illuminati number one.
This was one of my picks
when we were guessing what we might want. Yeah.
Yep.
This is sort of it's a supervillain book. It's and what I like about it is it's very the central character is kind of a B-list villain, Titania.
Yeah.
She goes back to the original Secret Wars. Who gave her power? Dr. Doom?
Dr. Doom.
Yeah, and she has like sort of She-Hulk level strength and a rivalry with She-Hulk.
Yep.
And going back as far as her first appearance, had a thing for the Absorbing Man, which has stuck around
yep.
Over the decades and has actually been an interesting led to depth both for her character and for him.
Dave, you properly called them Marvel's white trash couple.
Yes, they kind of are. They're the likable, kind of slightly skeevy
yeah.
White trash supervillains.
Yeah.
Anyway, when this begins, he is in prison and they're trying to sort of figure out what's going to happen when he gets out.
Yep.
And there's, you know, kind of, as there's actually a lot of, there's reform going on in our criminal justice system
yeah.
right now. And now, he's a legit criminal. He attacks banks with a giant wrecking ball.
Yeah.
But there is something, there's a little undercurrent here of, it's tough when you get out of prison. You cannot, yeah. And especially for the likes of them, they can't go back to normal jobs quite. And mm-hmm. they also still have, they kind of want to stay in the game.
And she's not allowed to use her powers.
And then she can't lose her powers. She's got like this bracelet, you know, essentially like an ankle bracelet
yeah.
to track you. But it also tracks whether she uses powers. And I actually really liked her immediately as a character in
yeah.
this. And she bumps into her old sparring partner, She-Hulk, who kind of has an offer to make to her
yeah.
To try and help her get on her feet. You know, she hates She-Hulk. She
yeah.
really hates her, but she kind of needs it. And that's sort of what it leads to is an opportunity that leads to another opportunity
yeah.
that has to do with supervillains. And so she's walking this line, you know, or leave it crossing the line as to whether she's going to try and go straight or whether she's going to join together with this group. And I think it's okay to say who's in the group.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we just know the Hood is the big.
The Hood is the big guy. Yeah, I won't say who else is in it. But the Hood, who went from a small-time Hood to
yeah.
kind of one of the more prominent sort of masterminds of the Marvel Universe, has an offer to make to her, too. And it leads to, you know, before this issue is out, there's action. She is tangling with some heroes.
Yep.
And she is trying to make a difficult moral decision, and she's finding herself potentially allied with a cool pack of supervillains. I like
yep.
these guys that are working with the Hood. And I'm looking forward to seeing what's going to occur with them. The art on this book was something I wasn't quite wild about, although I liked it. Sean Crystal is the artist.
Yeah.
And who's that guy who did, like, Legend of Luther Strode?
Oh, yeah. Trad Moore.
What is it?
Trad name? Moore.
Trad?
Trad.
Trad.
Oh, what a weird name. It looks somewhere between Trad Moore and the artists
Ryan Ottley
and the other Invincible
yeah.
artist is what I thought. It's a little cartoony, and for a series that actually I thought had a little depth and nuance to the characters, you know, like Titania and the other people around her, I felt a little cartoony, but I still like the style.
Yeah, I feel like this is a great artist with a weirdly paired with this book,
mm-hmm.
but it's good.
Yeah, it gives it a distinct look, and it's gonna make the book memorable in a way it wouldn't with a more realistic artist.
This
so. This
book reminds me of what I liked about, say, Avengers, was it Undercover?
Yeah.
And Thunderbolts, sort
yeah,
of looking
say,
at
even,
things from the villain's perspective.
Bit of Suicide Squad,
yeah.
As far as, like, you know, a sympathetic view of the villains, but also it's fun to watch the villains. It's fun to watch people be bad. Let's be
yeah.
bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to for sure need a few issues to, like, see if it maintains, but I was very pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I thought it was a good first issue.
I knew I'd like it because the writing is Joshua Williamson.
Yeah.
Who but is yeah, if you didn't say,
yeah.
Say who it was.
Dave, what is your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is the second, or not second issue, the second story arc of Descender, which is actually issue number...
Seven.
What is that, seven?
Yep.
I can't quite tell.
It's number seven.
It is number seven.
Okay.
Yep. And this is a perfect, I think, way to do a second story arc in the sense that I think you could come in, read the little recap on the first page, and not knowing anything, figure out everything that's going on.
Yeah, agreed.
But it also it's a very discreet storyline from the first one, but it for sure continues things.
Yeah. Also, the first trade is $10, so really, it's just go ahead and pick
yeah.
up the trade.
It's one of the most staff recommended trades we've ever
had.
We
love this book. Yeah.
And it's a very approachable sci-fi chase story
yep.
of sorts with a lot of human elements in it. And this introduces a creepy, cool, mysterious bounty hunter
yep.
for robots in the beginning.
Yep.
Dustin Nguyen, who's painted art on this, is a huge draw. And does these really cool, you know, I hate to compare it to Mass Effect, but I mean it in the best way. I don't feel like he's ripping it off. I feel like he's got a style that reflects it in the same way way back in the 80s Alien Legion
yeah.
did. You know, that's kind of there's a certain aesthetic, futuristic aesthetic he's got that's not like, obviously, Star Wars. I think
yeah.
Mass Effect is maybe the closest, and that's the only reason I keep mentioning it. But Just some robots that this guy takes down at the beginning. Just those kind of casually drawn robots look super cool.
Yeah.
And anyway, there's we also jump back to the robotic kid from the beginning. He's from the previous story arc. He's got some dark choices to make, and I don't want to get too much into some of the big reveals, but several new characters are introduced in this. I liked all of them. I liked the catch-up stuff with the other characters.
Yeah.
And, of course, I liked the art.
Yep.
So, very, very happy to see, you know, round two of Descender, what would be its Empire Strikes Back, I suppose.
Yeah.
Is shaping up to be its Empire Strikes Back.
Nick, about your cheater pick?
My cheater pick is The Ultimates, number one, which Marvel is repurposing the title from their Ultimate Universe for a new superhero group.
I feel like this is a weird title.
It's a little bit of a weird title, but I kind of like it because it's not your traditional superhero group in the sense that, they're not ultimately trying to stop the bad guys stealing the, you know, robbing banks or anything like that. Mm-hmm. They're sort of out to figure out the really tough problems. And the first problem they tackle, which is not a huge spoiler or anything, is Galactus. And not to the sense of wanting to destroy him or anything. Mm-hmm. They're trying to help him.
Interesting.
And it's sort of that kind of notion.
That's a super high-level problem to deal with. That's like Reed Richards level.
And that's why they have people like, I mean, it's T'Challa.
Black Panther. Who was, you were telling me about this earlier. He was, of course, on the Illuminati. And when I was recommending the new Illuminati, I never quite mentioned that they are, that it is sort of a repurposing of that name, too.
Yeah.
But the Hood has, it's really Hood's crew.
There are some references in here to the Illuminati and sort of what these characters think of that.
Right.
And it's interesting. It makes me like the book even more. But this is all sort of super science-y. It feels in some ways a lot like Warren Ellis.
Okay.
But it's Al Ewing, so the guy who's doing Uncanny Avengers as well.
No, I thought Uncanny Avengers was Jared Dugan. Al Ewing's doing New Avengers.
Dun, dun, dun.
Okay. Well, one of them. I guess that's correct. But basically, this is super science-y stuff. Cause
can we say who else is on?
You should mention the team. The team is
it's
a good
T'Challa,
lineup.
It's Photon, or Monica Rambeau.
Yeah, formerly Captain Marvel, and a bunch of other.
They also have Captain Marvel on the team.
Formerly Warbird, formerly Miss Marvel.
Also formerly Binary.
Carol Danvers. Carol Danvers.
There's a cool reference to Binary in here.
Really?
I wasn't expecting. Okay. There's also Miss America, who she was...
America Chavez from Young Avengers, right?
Yeah, Young Avengers. She's prominently in A-Force from the Secret Wars crossover. And then there's Blue Marvel, which I actually don't know a ton about.
I just know he was introduced as sort of a lost hero kind of thing.
He's kind of
a little like Sentry was.
Yeah.
I thought he was sort of like another Superman analog. But the way they play him out here is he's a super scientist.
Yeah.
He's a living antimatter reactor and super genius. I liked the character. He comes across... He's
sounds like Superman with Jor-El's tech.
That's actually a good comparison. Mm-hmm. But no, there's some really cool stuff in here.
All these guys are high power level, but except for Black Panther, who's got the super science. Those are all high power level people.
He's super science, but he's also apparently re-upped, you know, Wakanda and using the technology.
Yeah.
They have a new base of operations, the Triskelion, which operates in different.
Dimension.
Think of like, yeah, dimension, sort of like the bleed, like the in the Authority. It can move in weird ways.
And you know, the Black Panther, despite having a low power set, is often written as sort of a Batman-esque, you know, planner.
Well, remember, he put Silver Surfer in an arm lock.
That's true. But yeah, no, there are some odd things in here, like giant talking heads and...
Well, if your first goal is, let's save Galactus, talking heads don't seem that weird.
No, but
giant
I feel like
heads,
Al Ewing...
I should say.
Does a really good job of capturing all the different characters and sort of their aspects. Monica Rambeau gets some great moments. America Chavez gets some great moments. Carol Danvers also. I mean, I like when a writer does that. They get
their... Everybody gets their shot.
Yeah, everyone gets their shot.
Nick, would you say that this is approachable even if you don't know those
characters?
Extremely
approachable. There's also some big stuff for the Marvel Universe. Like, what exactly... where things are at, which is interesting. Not going to spoil any of that, because you have to read to find out. But, no, I was very, very pleased with this. And Kenneth Rockefeller, who's another artist, I'm not a super big fan of his. I'm not a big fan of his Top Cow style in a lot of ways.
Yep.
But here, I think it's reined in a bit. I think it's very approachable.
He's got some talent.
Oh, there's yeah. No, he definitely has talent. It's just personal taste for me. But here, I think he does a good job with it. And I was very impressed with this issue for a book that I was not expecting much from.
Hmm.
So, yay.
My cheater pick is an Image book. The Goddamned. And I'm going to say that a lot throughout this review, so if your kid's listening, sorry.
We need to put together a display in the store of Bitch Planet, The Goddamned, and Southern Bastards, and whatever else we can
and
find.
And a variant of I Hate Fairyland.
Yes.
So The Goddamned takes place 1,600 years after Eden.
Yes, it's a Bible times
comic. It's post-apocalyptic Bible times. And this is written by Jason Aaron with his... When he first came into comics, he did a book called Scalped for Vertigo.
Yep.
With an artist named R.M. Guerra. This is the two of them re-teaming. And it starts with this sort of this guy who wakes up from being supposedly murdered by these marauding guys called the Bone Boys in this weird biblical post-apocalyptic place. There's a kid who's sort of watched him get killed and is amazed when he gets back up. And then he goes after the Bone Boys, who are this... Road Warrior-esque.
I was going to mention Road Warrior, because the same way Road Warrior is post-apocalyptic, but as you're watching it, it stakes out, okay, these are the factions.
Yeah.
You know, this first issue does a good job of laying out who the players are in this kind of gritty, biblical, like, legendary biblical era.
There's a ton of violence. There's a ton of bad language.
Yep.
There's a lot of blood. But there's a lot of male nudity because it's it's biblical area.
They don't care about clothes.
And they don't care so much about clothes. Although they wear like bearskins and stuff.
Yeah.
But
it just ain't shy about showing people a little bit nakedy.
But yeah, this is a the lead. I won't give away who the lead is, but when they finally reveal it, I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. And then they reveal who's sort of tracking him, and that's even more cool.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what to expect from this, but I thought it was just a great opener of sort of. Post-apocalyptic fantasy violence, basically. It's
right. Well, it'll be interesting to see. I think based on who the characters are.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, we don't want to reveal this. It'll be interesting to see what Jason Era's approach is. Like, what's he trying to do?
Yeah.
What's the story he's trying to tell? General thoughts. You know, usually the Bible is, oh, this is an instructional moral guide.
Yeah.
But as far back as, like, I want to say in the mid-80s when I started reading Vertigo stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, wait, these are angels who've, like, turned on God?
Yeah.
This is a corrupt one? What's this preacher have to say about God? Vertigo has long mined, you know, these subversive notions about dealing with it. And this looks like this will be mining some somewhat similar concepts.
Yeah. This honestly feels like it could have been a Vertigo book if Vertigo was what it once was.
Right, yeah.
Image has become what Vertigo was.
Right.
If you're liking Southern Bastards, if you're liking, what else, Thor that he's writing, if you're liking Jason Aaron's stuff in general, this is really good.
Yeah, yeah.
I really liked it. I was hoping to like it, and it delivered for me, so I'm very excited to see where it goes from here.
It's goddamn good.
Also on my list this week of a giant week, Web Warriors number one, which is another Marvel oversized thing. This is basically a continuation of Spider-Verse, where they left off with a bunch of the Spider-Men and women basically operating from an other-dimensional fortress to go to the dimensions where the Inheritors killed all the Spider-Men.
Yep.
So they're basically going to worlds that don't have a Spider-Man to protect them anymore and protecting them as if Spider-Man was there. So it's got Spider-Gwen, Anya, a.k.a. Aranya, a.k.a. Spider-Woman, the
Noir.
Spider-Man UK, Spider-Man Noir, Spider-Pig, and Spider-Man India.
Spider-Ham.
Spider-Ham. And it opens with them fighting crime in the cartoon universe because that's a safe place to train.
that's kind of a clever idea.
And then goes back to sort of establish where they are. And then there's also a little bit of soul searching between Spider-Gwen and Anya. Or no, between Mayday Parker. Sorry, it's Mayday Parker and Spider-Gwen. Sort of talking about what they want to do.
That is the same Spider-Gwen as the Spider-Gwen who's got her own book?
Yep.
Okay.
And then there's an introduction of a new villain group, which makes perfect sense in this book. And I really like where they're going with that. And then there's a backup featuring Lady Steampunk Spider. So lots of that stuff. If you like Spider-Verse, this is a good continuation of it. I fell off the Web Warrior stuff they did in Secret Wars. I was not as big on it. And so I wasn't sure if I was going to like this, but I wound up liking this one quite a bit.
Yeah, that's a good first issue.
There is Superman American Alien, which is the new 8-issue miniseries by Max Landis, who... Where do people know Max Landis from? What has he done? What's the movie he's done?
Is he the guy who did the found footage superhero movie?
Chronicle? No, that's Josh Trank.
Okay.
I don't know. Did he... No, what is it? Max Brooks is the guy who wrote...
Nick is going to Google it while you proceed on.
Anyway, Max Landis doing a tale of early days Clark, like teenage Clark learning to use his powers. It's got sort of cartoony art from Nick Dragotta.
I believe each issue of this miniseries will show a time in a young Clark Kent's life, but before he became Superman.
Right, right. Picking up then another image book that starts back up this week that's been long awaited is The Autumn Lands, number 7. This is Kurt Busiek and Ben Dewey's story of sort of a fantasy anthropomorphic animal world, which I finally read in trade and really liked. So now I'm catching up on that, and I'm really digging it. That's nice to have back. Darth Vader, number 12, sort of concludes the arc they've been doing and leads into the Vader Down crossover between Star Wars and Darth Vader.
Right.
Spider-Man 29, number 3, continues that book in a sort of a darker vein. Radioactive Spider-Gwen, number 2, is the continuation of the Spider-Gwen books. Twilight Children, number 2, is the magical realism South American character-driven book by Gilbert Hernandez and art by Darwin Cook that we all kind of liked last time when the first issue came out.
Yep, I haven't read the second issue yet. Looking forward to trying it.
I really enjoyed it. Also in graphic novels this week, Alien Next Door, subtitled In Space, No One Can Hear You Clean, which has features an alien from the Alien movies and his pet cat and their day-to-day life. It's all silent, one-panel comics, all sort of painty.
Something of a piece with Jeffrey Brown's Star Wars.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you like the Darth Vader and Son and all that kind of stuff, check out Alien Next Door. It is in the same ballpark. Did you find out what Mac Landis does?
I did, and Dave is not wrong, actually. He wrote the screenplay for
Chronicle, okay.
He also was the guy who wrote American Ultra that just came out, and the upcoming Victor Frankenstein.
Okay. Yeah, no, he's part of Chronicle. That makes sense, but I kept thinking Josh Trank, but Josh Trank was the director. Also this week in trades, Hellbreak Volume 1, which is the special ops who go into hell to recover souls.
That's a good book.
I like that book, and glad to see it collected in the first trade. Superman Adventures finally gets a trade. This is Paul Dini, Scott McCloud, and Rick Burchett doing the Superman in the era of the animated series, all original stories. There's great stuff in here, and glad to see that all collected.
Yeah, it's good, like... All ages Superman stuff from the 90s that I remember, like some of the Scott McCloud did a couple of neat things, like almost like a memento style story.
Yeah.
One of his first ones in there, which was cool. Cool to see with Superman.
And then finally, Fatale Volume 2, the hardcover, completing the story of Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips' sort of Cthulhu influenced noir story, which I really loved. I'm glad to finally have all in one big collection.
I need to make a project of reading that series
soon. Yep, it's good. Nick, what else is on your stack?
I don't know if I'll be repeating anything because I was looking up Max Landis and not paying attention to what you were
saying. We'll sneer at you
but
if you do.
I have Carnage number 1, which was interesting, written by Jerry Conway, art by Mike Perkins.
Yeah, Perkins has that really nice art.
Yeah, but if you're a fan of Carnage, this is sort of his book. He likes serial killers. But no.
Now is your time.
The final issue of Thor's. By Jason Aaron and Chris Sprouse.
Yep.
I thought it was a good ending. Tying into the other book that I will mention, it's just Secret Wars number 7.
What's the Secret Wars?
The 7th issue finally hits, and it's a pretty big one. Battles are starting up, and the stuff is hitting the fan. did you mention Birthright?
I did not.
Okay. The new... issue of Birthright, which sees the new story arc begin.
Third story arc, right?
It is the third story arc. Yeah. Really, really good. The final issue of Infinity Gauntlet from Secret Wars. The newest issue of Batman, which sees...
Well, judging by the cover, a bearded Bruce Wayne and Batman are tied up together.
Yes, they are tied up together dealing with Mr. Bloom.
Yeah, the weird sunflower-looking dude.
Yep.
The third issue of Jerry Dugan's Chewbacca miniseries.
All right.
Which sees him teaming up with a little girl fighting aliens, which is cool. And then the second issue of Uncanny Avengers, which I have not read yet, but I'm looking forward to seeing this new Inhuman, who's their villain at the moment.
Interesting.
Sort of plant-based villain, which is cool. Dave? That is all that I have.
Did y'all hit All New Hawkeye yet?
Nope.
All right, All New Hawkeye. Jeff Lemire continues with the relaunch, and Ramon Perez on art.
Doing two different styles, right?
Doing two different styles for a both the present time, which where the art looks a little bit like... who was the previous artist?
David Aja, yeah.
David Aja, sort of as David Aja pastiche. And then there's a sort of flash-forward style that I would say, which is 20 years in the future.
Yeah.
A possible future, I guess, for these characters.
Yeah.
And a style that maybe resembles a little bit more Jeff Lemire's artwork, but it's also its own thing.
It's painty.
I really like this. I haven't read any of the Hawkeye since Fractions run, and so it's weird for me to be reading something that's clearly a continuation of it, but it stands on its own enough. It's, focuses on Hawkeye, Man Hawkeye and She Hawkeye, which is Kate Bishop. And sort of a, not quite part, they're dealing with Hammerhead here, some low-level sort of crime stuff in his neighborhood. But there's also something of a parting of ways, and stuff that deals with also a, 20 years in the future, where you see them both teaming up. After having parted ways.
Yeah, there's a lot. The key of this is really the relationship between Kate Bishop and Hawkeye, where she's been sort of disappointed in his failures as a person and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it. I'm going to stick around and see where it goes. It was nice to find something nice that it was as approachable as it was, given that I haven't read it for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
I should probably read it for the last 5 years. There's the final issue of James Robinson's autobiographical Airboy.
Yep.
Which ends on a strong note, I think. This is his somewhat self-loathing portrait of a creator fallen on hard times, even as he falls into the fictional world of the book he's trying to revive, a sort of pulp World War II story.
Yep.
Vertigo's got a new book called Slash and Burn that I want to read because it's got firefighters in it, but I haven't read it yet.
Sure.
So I don't know. Image has a new number one called Limbo. Randy, remind me of the premise on it.
It's like 50s noir through an 80s lens.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
There's the third issue of Zodiac Star Force, the sort of slightly, not I don't want to say meta, but slightly more real-world Sailor Moon thing.
Yeah.
A little bit of grown-up in high school stuff with combined with girls doing Sailor Moon type stuff.
Sure.
And Captain America White number 4, which I have not gotten around to, but I've loved the previous three issues, so I anticipate good things.
All right. That about wraps up our comics talk for this week. We'll be back in just a moment to talk about some podcast stuff and a movie that we all saw and a whole bunch of TV. All right, I'm going to start us off with something we've all seen, which is we all went and saw James Bond Spectre on Sunday.
Yes.
Yes.
And I believe we have varying degrees of liking it.
Right, right. We have a full spectrum.
We all liked it.
Right.
But some of us liked it more than others.
Right.
It's true.
And Dave, you may have liked it the most of us.
Right, I think I did. For reasons that I can't quite pin down, like, I can't objectively say it was a great movie.
Yeah.
But I had a really good time. So,
you were in that 60 spy mode. You were ready for it.
I guess so.
Although
so.
It's maybe, not 60 spy, it's
maybe
modern
the Bond
spy.
Comic primed me for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, everybody knows from the title that Spectre reemerges. You know, Bond's... Well, the organization that was created, I read this just the other day, by Ian Fleming... In like sometime in the mid or late 60s, to replace SMERSH, the evil Russian organization, because he's like, the Cold War is going to blow over any day now. He's like, and I don't want to have dated, you know, bad guys that don't fit anymore.
Yep. It only took 20 years.
Yeah. but he got nervous, and so he created this more international organization that, you know, like had bad guys from all the different countries. That was sort of the hook for Spectre.
Yep.
The movie obviously has its own take on that. And, honestly, in a weird way, the Spectre stuff is kind of the weakest part of the
movie. It is. It really is.
Yeah.
Who's the...
You have Christoph Waltz. And I felt like they really didn't... Every bit that he was in it I thought was great.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a really disservice in giving him a really weak character.
Right. You want, like... When you're introducing a character at that level...
Yeah.
You want him to have the weight of... Classic Bond villains like Blofeld.
Yeah.
You want him to have the feel like General Zod in Superman 2 or Khan. You want to be like scared by these guys.
Yeah.
Honestly, the last villain I saw that was kind of along those lines and in a kind of unusual way was When we watched Mission Impossible 3, Philip Seymour Hoffman, bad guy, that was a scary dude.
Yeah,
he was very scary.
And I would have liked something more like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I thought Javier Bardem in the last one.
Yeah, Javier Bardem was closer to what I wanted.
Like him,
he was creepy.
Where I thought the movie's greatest strengths were kind of like, and honestly, in its supporting cast, it's all the dudes from MI.
They're M, they're Q, and they're Moneypenny.
Yeah, they all got somewhat notable roles in this. They were almost more like active field agents at times.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed seeing them all work together. Still liking Craig as Bond, and I kind of like the somewhat more serious romantic interest in this, not quite as throwaway as.
Yeah,
as
although again, I feel like they didn't earn the romantic interest. Like all of a sudden they were true loves, and you just met.
I mean, it's the Hollywood.
I know, but I've seen that done better, and Three Days of the Condor. I thought they didn't do a good job with it.
Earned it a little bit more by making a rather big thing about his, Bond finding love to the point where he was ready to quit.
He did quit. He sent in his resignation.
That's true. I did notice in this that he seems to be in a continual state of resignation or being taken off the grid.
Yes, yep.
In all the new Craig movies.
Yep.
And likewise, MI6 seems to be getting shut down in every single one.
Yeah.
There's some version of it
single time.
That's
the same conceit that Mission Impossible goes by.
Yeah, Mission Impossible always has the IMF being shut down. Yeah.
It's X-Files syndrome.
Yeah. Yeah.
X-Files are getting closed down.
It's a formula that works.
I love the opening.
The opening is great, and has that long shot.
Yeah, there's a tracking shot.
Yeah. They cheat a little bit, but in general, it's like one long take.
Bond is just the coolest in it, you know. I've read some complaints about it. There's a few reveals people didn't like. I actually the reveal was either sort of neither here nor there for me.
Yeah,
that didn't add a ton, but it didn't detract. And in getting to that reveal, they did reveal they brought all the movies together at least. You saw linkages between all of the Daniel Craig movies,
which was probably my favorite part of the entire movie.
I like that too.
I like that they brought in all of Daniel Craig's movies and sort of tied a nice little ribbon.
Right, right. You saw sort of in a way how Spectre wove through his history.
Yeah. I kind of want this to be his last movie. I feel like this was a good capper.
Well, there was
on
that
the
whole
Daniel
thing
Craig.
Where he went on. Did an interview where he was saying that I'd never want to do Bond again.
Yeah, he sounded real serious about it. But like, then he's backpedaling.
He's backpedaling.
Well, then he might have been like, "Hey, you know how much money they pay me for this?"
Yeah.
But I
feel like if there is one more movie in it for him that I would like to see following this one,
I'd go see another one. I feel like this was a good capper to it.
I want to see more of the other 00s.
I always kind of wish to see a little bit more, almost a slightly more of a buddy sort of thing would be kind of
they
cool.
Referenced, what, 009 in this one?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
And, of course, in Pierce Brosnan's, they did the whole whatever Sean Bean was. He was like
008, I think.
008. I guess there's a risk in that because you never want to outshine Bond.
Yeah.
But you want to make the person likable, but what if they become too likable and they're like, this guy's more human than Bond, I like him better.
You know what's interesting? In this world of cinematic universes...
Yeah.
It is interesting they've never tried to do a spinoff where they do a 009 and create a new character.
Or Felix Leiter gets a movie.
Or Felix Leiter gets
a movie.
Honestly,
I think it could probably work.
I think so, too, to be honest, yeah.
And I don't know why they aren't capitalizing.
Well, I think Dave hit on the danger. The danger is you don't want to make somebody else who's cooler than Bond.
And he is, I think you said it, Randy, Nick, the other day, he's basically Batman at this point.
Yeah.
He's kind of an unstoppable force.
And plus, his rogues gallery is insane. I mean, if you really look at it.
Is it really? I don't think his rogues gallery is notably good.
I mean, if you consider all of Bond history, I mean, you got like
Goldfinger and Spectre.
Goldfinger, Blofeld.
Well, I think Nick is talking about just the scope of their weirdness. It's almost like an international Dick Tracy villain.
Sure, okay.
What's the... Not Lockjaw, but...
Jaws. But those guys are all from like the 70s. Has Bond had a really notable villain? I mean, most of their villains are pretty forgettable, I think.
I have liked all the villains. I'm not enough of a Bond aficionado to draw all the names out. But, like, his villains are always likable, but they always die at the end if they're not Blofeld.
Yeah. No, I just go back to even the early ones, like Scaramanga, the Man with the Golden Gun, and Dr. No. I think all his memorable villains were, like, 30 years ago. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I just can't...
Well, the Daniel Craig villains were sort of...
They're all okay.
They were sort of kind of businessmen, or I mean, Le Chiffre wasn't really a a fantastic bad guy, but he was a he was a money guy.
See, I always feel like their reasons for existence is to give Bond somebody to shoot. But I never feel like there's much of a story to his villains. Like, they tried to do that with Javier Bardem.
Well, I believe they, you know, these villains all feel like throwbacks to pulp villains. From you know, Ian Fleming, although he had a pretty good writing style, definitely had a foot in the pulp genre, or pulp, you know, kind of idiom. And so, to me, it doesn't bother me too much that they don't have a lot of depth. I wouldn't mind seeing one with a little bit more. And they flirt with it sometimes, Javier Bardem.
Yeah.
A little bit more depth. Christoph Waltz has a little bit more depth.
Yeah.
They haven't, like, kind of created... They haven't hit con in a while.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing that Nick and his wife and I were talking about afterwards is that Bond is definitely basically a misogynist property. It is, like, the girls, no matter what, they try to give the girls a little bit more, but they're still Bond girls. Like, right. But if they were to do a cinematic universe and made 009, like, a badass female... MI6 agent, a Tara Chase type. That'd be a great expansion of the universe.
Well, honestly, you could even play around with it and have like a Rogue Spectre agent, you know, in another one. You could build up a kind of a cool universe.
Yeah,
the new Q is a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I like the new Q in these.
And Ralph Fiennes as M is fantastic.
Yeah.
What was funny is that the end of the previous one, Skyfall, they were sort of rebuilding MI6, and it was kind of low tech.
Yeah,
and then this newest one, and they're like, we're shutting MI6 down. Not quite, but a variant of that.
Yeah,
they do have some fun gadgets in this one.
Yeah, and you know what I noticed for I don't know, maybe for better or worse, but there was a little bit more of a little humor, kind of little, even a little campiness that snuck its way into some of the chases and stuff like that. Some other little bits and pieces. I don't know how I particularly feel. It doesn't hurt me. It felt a little out of place since they've been so serious.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Oh, and I also thought we didn't mention Dave Bautista. I thought was a good henchman.
Yeah. I was actually trying to recall...
One line in the movie.
I don't know if it's... I don't want to spoil anything, but I couldn't remember if he survived it.
Sort of. In a Bond movie, he could have survived it.
Okay.
I think the intent is that, they killed him, but we didn't see him die.
No. That when he's fighting with Craig, it looks brutal.
Yeah.
Like he's a guy to be scared of in this.
Well, and he's huge.
Yeah, he's huge.
The train fight was honestly pretty great.
He's very dapper.
Yeah.
I mean, he was wearing, like, the best suits.
Oh, right? Man, and that reminds me that, like, Bond had some of the best clothes in this.
Yeah. And you were saying, Randy, it's like, you don't often notice clothing, the good looks and style of guys in movies. But, yeah, Bond was pretty impeccable.
Bond is stylish in every scene he's in. Yeah.
In a way, I think he hasn't been in a while. Like, okay, he's always got a classy tux and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But he, you know, Craig's wardrobe, I think, has been meticulously chosen.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that it's, you know, a lot of times the stuff he's wearing doesn't look perfectly pressed and stuff like that. It has a little bit of wear to it, but it's like a very... controlled wear.
Yeah.
And it always looks really good.
I think that's one of the things I like about the Bond movies. Even if the plots are a little weak, the characters, everything else is great. Like the actors they get are the best. The cinematography is great. The music is great.
I
the wardrobe is great.
Their locations for the last several movies have been amazing.
Yeah. On a technical level, these are always beautiful films.
Right. It's they don't necessarily hang together great as movies as a whole.
Yeah.
But there's lots of neat stuff throughout. Like I'm always enjoying it. I like the music.
Yeah.
I always like the introduction. You know, all that stuff.
Dev, you were talking about before we went. Saw it about how you view Bond in ways as sort of a highlight reel.
Yeah, that was actually something my friend Jimmy said, and he's Bond fan number one.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, he knows the weaknesses of it. He's a big movie guy in general, and he knows these are not perfect movies. And he said, he's like, Bond is maybe best viewed as a clip show in some ways.
Yeah. And I think that's actually true.
Yeah, you watch a highlight reel of the best chases, the best henchmen, that kind of stuff.
So before we get to TV.
Yep.
Dave, you and I both went to the Welcome to Night Vale live show this weekend.
Yeah, and I can't remember. We saw it last year too, which is making it, it's become a fun tradition now.
Yes.
Did we talk about it for the podcast?
No.
Did we not?
No, we just went.
How the previous years?
Oh, the previous years? I don't remember.
Yeah. It was super fun.
Yeah, it was really good, and I think better than last year's.
I agree. I feel like they got that's a little more polished.
Yeah.
Fun role, like who's the Jeffrey Fink's wife?
Jeffrey
Craner,
Joseph Fink's wife.
Joseph Fink's wife, Meg, who does the outro of the show,
yep.
And for this, does both intro and sort of outro.
Yeah.
It has a sort of, it's a sort of the warm-up act.
Yep.
She talks to the audience for a bit, tells you the rules in a funny way.
Yeah, she was fun. She was having a good time.
And her bit was more polished.
Yeah.
She was really good.
They still have a music interlude.
Yeah,
yes, they did.
The same person, I think they had before.
Musician,
Eliza,
yeah.
Something.
Eliza, her last name is one you should be able to remember, and I can't remember it now.
It's pretty cool how they're able to mimic
Rickman.
Sort of the...
Eliza Rickman.
There you go, that's right, that was part of her spiel. The conceit of the show was a neat one, and you know, by the way, I assume that people here know about Night Vale as a podcast.
We've definitely talked about the podcast.
If not, check it out. It's cool and fun and weird. The conceit here is that there's been a murder in Night Vale, and that the town has had to gather at, like, the local school auditorium
or
the gym or whatever.
Everyone in town has had to gather for murder mystery dinner theater, which in Night Vale means the Sheriff's Secret Police interrogating everyone.
Right. Cecil is an exception. He's broadcasting.
Yep.
And so you, the audience member, are meant to be one of those people locked up in the auditorium.
Yes.
Pretty awesome.
And, they brought in the guy who plays Carlos, which to huge, thunderous applause. Yeah. People love that.
I think Cecil and Carlos may be the favorite fictional gay couple of present times.
But Carlos, the scientist, and his love of dinner theater and sort of over-enthusiastic was hilarious.
Right. He like, super wants to go to, you know, because they want to interrogate him because he's not yet at the thing.
But he wants to go because he loves musical theater, and he's gonna try out for all the roles, and they don't quite understand
what it's going to happen.
No. And then they brought in Steve Carlsberg. The guy who played Steve Carlsberg was great.
Steve Carlsberg in there. The sort of
dopey,
sort of
genial,
fun, brother-in-law?
Brother-in-law of Cecil.
Cecil.
And Cecil hates him.
Yes. His antagonism towards him was amazing.
Yeah.
Of course, Cecil himself is the heart of the show.
And he's great. He was really great. And they had a lot of fun reacting to the audience.
Yeah. There's a reason why this is a live show, and it plays off of audience reactions.
Yep.
When favorite characters appear, audience members cheer. They'll when certain things happen.
Yep. They even bring the audience in a few points, which was kind of fun.
Yeah, which they had done.
They encourage you to and get to know the strangers sitting around you.
Yeah, and in fact, as a sort of this sort of somewhat serious underpinnings of the show, not super serious.
Yeah.
And this was the same as it was last time, was to kind of bring together a bit of that kind of the oddballs of the world.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a nice gesture.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I think this year they had Disparition, which is the guy who does the music for them, which neither you nor I remember.
We don't remember
him
last time.
If he was there, he was off stage, I think.
Yeah.
And that was cool to see him too, because I always love his just background tracks.
Yeah, if you're a Night Vale fan at all, this is totally worth attending.
Yeah,
it's such a fun time. Plus, they had all the people in costumes.
Yeah, people were wearing aside from just t-shirts and stuff.
Yep.
There was somebody who was dressed as the Glow Cloud.
There were several Cecils.
Yep. I did not see any faceless old woman who lives in your home.
I did not see any faceless old woman either. I did see a hooded figure from the dog park.
Nice.
It was a blast. And I've been reading the Night Vale novel, which is why they're doing this. They're doing this live tour. They're also doing a book tour, which I went to. And the book's been a lot of fun, and I definitely recommend that as well.
Yep.
So.
And we've already thanked him, but a thank you to Nathan Killian, who we saw there.
Yeah.
He's a great customer and friend. And who was the guy who put us on to Night Vale a couple years back in the first place?
Yep. All right, so moving on to TV.
Dear God, do we have a lot of television
talk? Yeah. So, Nick, let's you and I talk about Ash vs. Evil Dead.
Yes.
Okay, have you seen the second episode?
No, because Stars is evil and I hate them.
Right, yeah. I found a way to watch the second episode, and I'll say no more than that.
Right.
But Ash vs. Evil Dead...
Is that the volunteer?
Ash vs. Evil Dead episode 1 is free on Stars' website. And we both watched that.
Yep.
And it was great.
It was. It was pretty much everything Evil Dead 1 and 2 was sort of taken to that next level. We see Ash as sort of an older guy.
Yep.
Still running from his past a bit.
Yep.
And
still kind of a dork and a goofball.
Yeah.
It's funny because Ash was always sort of this badass hero with a high pain tolerance, but at the same time kind of a goof.
Yeah.
And, so basically, you know, 20 or 30 years later, whatever, he's an older guy. The first scene is him getting strapped into a man girdle.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, is he strapping on his badass chainsaw arm? No, he's strapping on a man girdle so he can go to work at the big discount chain he works at. You know, the way that he accidentally resummons the Evil Dead this time is so perfectly in line with Ash.
That's awesome.
I mean, a lot of this hinges on Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, and he's having
great.
A blast. Yeah,
and sort of the people, the two dopes.
It's not sad like it could have been. It could have been kind of pathetic.
Yeah,
the two guys, the supporting cast. I don't know if it continues.
Yeah,
in the second episode, the guy and the girl. That
yeah, the young guy and girl who are sort of working with him and who get dragged
kind of
into it.
And yeah. fun.
Well, and there's also a story going on with Annette with an FBI agent, I think.
Yes.
Who her partner gets killed. They have a run-in with the Evil Dead, and now she is sort of trying to get involved in the whole thing. And
I forgot. What's the tone like overall?
Because like goofy, you know, but horror-ish.
Okay, but like there's like FBI know about the Evil Dead.
No.
It's sort of she has a. They visit a house that there's a disturbance at, and it just so happens that the Evil Dead are...
Yeah, okay. She wrote there's a run-in with a deadite, and her partner gets killed, and...
I've forgotten how much I missed the swooshing...
Sam Raimi camera effect, work.
The camera work.
Because Sam Raimi directs the pilot, and it's very Sam Raimi. Lots of spurting blood, and swooshing cameras,
the
and...
Car
comical
there.
Horror.
Yeah.
The car is there.
But also sort of gross out scary. I mean, like, the Evil Dead, the deadites are scary, and on a TV budget, they really work. Like, there's a woman who turns her head all the way around. They're just undead.
Yeah, they're undead.
But they're
weird
like,
undead.
They're evil dead. They're not like the mindless zombies. They're actually just like...
They want to kill you.
They want to kill you, and they want to like psychologically torment you. Yeah, they're malicious. They'll yell things at you and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
In the first episode, Lucy Lawless shows up.
Just briefly.
Briefly. And I'm like, oh, that's cool.
And a thing to tease without going setting up.
Yeah. But I know they worked together before on...
Xena, yeah.
He produced it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's but Bruce Campbell and I, because Bruce Campbell was on Xena.
Right. Yeah. Right. But Raimi, was a producer. Yeah.
So it was nice to see that sort of.
Yeah, that's fun.
I like Lucy Lawless a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know, how was the second episode compared to the first?
Really fun. And the here's the cool thing. I guess going on, it's a half hour show, which is about pacing for it. Yeah.
Okay. Very
so,
cool.
I was not sure about this. I could easily have seen this being a disappointment or, you know, toothless or whatever. It falls right. It feels perfect, like
so
just a sequel to.
It landed in the hands of the people who it
should
needed
we mention
to land
the
in.
One weirdness with it that
which
they
is,
can't actually.
Oh yeah, they don't have the rights to Army of Darkness.
So that is sort of taken out of canon.
Yeah, so they
which
don't.
Is a little strange.
So they can't mention the time travel thing.
No. Right?
Can he use his catchphrasey type things from it?
No.
Can he
give you some sugar baby, all that stuff? They don't mention any. They don't use
but
any
he already,
of that stuff.
You don't have reusing him would have been lame anyway. You want to kind of like find some fresh.
He's got his chainsaw on him. That was from the second one.
Yeah,
the shotgun.
Yes,
he's got the shotgun.
And he does call it a boomstick in the second episode.
All right, so because that must have did that show up in the. Second movie.
No.
It was Evil Dead 2.
Yeah,
think
he didn't call it a boomstick.
He didn't?
He calls it good, bad on the guy with the gun. No, that's in the third one, too. No, boomstick was oh, or was it at the end of the...
I think it was at the end of the second one.
Okay.
It has been a long time since I've seen Evil Dead 2.
At any rate, it's not like it's forbidden. It's just that they can't talk about the time travel and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, like, when they did the Lord of the Rings movies, this is kind of a small thing, but they couldn't do anything from the Silmarillion, the big mythic thing.
Right.
Which, there is stuff that that would have, you know, been able to mention their legends and tales and influences and stuff. But, you know, nobody notices.
Yeah, at no point did I feel like they were missing anything.
Right. It sounds like it's very Sam Raimi and Evil Dead.
It was fun.
I will try to find it, maybe, but I know I'll probably end up picking this up on Blu-ray, just based on that first episode.
Yeah. Okay, so Nick, you watched there's some original shows going on. You watched two of the original shows from Amazon.
Yeah, no, I was just kind of perusing Amazon Prime yesterday on my day off, and I found two shows. The first one I want to talk about is an all-ages show. It's the Gortimer
Givens' Life on Normal Street.
Yeah, which is an all-ages show. If you've watched...
How did you randomly want it? Like, I have kids. I can't imagine randomly deciding to watch this show.
Well, I looked it up, and there's two seasons available. Uh-huh. And then I was like, oh, well, that kind of looks fun. And I looked up at a review, and, like, it's getting really great reviews and sort of saying that it is both accessible to kids, but also really fun for adults. So I was like, well, I like that sort of stuff, so let me give it a try. And it is very approachable. It's a lot of fun. I think Katie would just...
So what's the pitch?
The pitch is they live on a street called Normal Street, but anything but normal is what occurs on this. There's toads that actually are, like, the ultimate doom... And dealing with, like, robots, and it's sort of eerie Indiana style.
Okay.
Night Vale in the
Or Night Vale. Yeah. It's sort of that oddness and weirdness that these group of kids, there's three of them. There's the main character, there's sort of the, and then his two plucky sidekicks, essentially.
Okay.
And them sort of dealing with this while keeping a level head and sort of just being kids. And that sort of balance I found to be very entertaining.
Sounds very Spielbergian.
Yeah, it is sort of like that. And like the Ash, it's 30 minutes long.
Okay.
So it's very brief, but very, you know, to the point and fun. They've got some good guest appearances on there from, like, actors that I... Notably, I think the first episode, I can't remember her name. Anyways, doesn't matter. They're getting good guests on there. And I've watched the first three episodes, and I'm really looking forward to sitting down with it again.
Okay. Does it, like, have a creepy, eerie tone, or is it all kind of comedically done?
No, it's not really creepy or eerie. It's more of sort of that Spielberg type, kind of upbeat, but dealing with some stuff that they might not really know what it is. I mean,
right.
One of the episodes that I watched, I think it was the third one, is dealing with sort of this mobile of bad luck. And, like, a kid in town has the worst luck ever. Like, completely the worst luck. And then it sort of rubs off onto the main character.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all dealing with this mobile that was cursed and... you know, can cause bad luck to anybody.
That old plot.
And there's some cool... in the middle of each one, they've had sort of a CG element, like some sort of little, like, past story that's told either through, like, some sort of CG element. It's really cool. So, yeah, I was very excited about it, about finding it.
And then the other Amazon show?
The other one is called Red Oaks, which is sort of a weird combination of Caddyshack meets Risky Business.
Okay.
About a 20-something sort of not quite sure what he wants to do in his life. His father is sort of pushing him to be a CPA. And he joins... He is a tennis pro at a...
Country club?
Country club, yeah. And... sort of
called Red Oaks.
Yes, is that the country club? That's the country club. Yeah, so that's that. But, you know, and it's got the Caddyshack vibe because some of the characters at the country club are kind of crazy. The sort of person that he works for, the head tennis pro, is kind of hilariously a womanizer. Just
is this snobs versus slobs type thing?
A little bit, and he has sort of a rivalry with the golf pro. There and his girlfriend, the main character's girlfriend, is the dance instructor.
Okay.
And this takes place in 1985, so it's very sort of flash dance.
Right,
and
sure.
All of those kind of things come to
Yeah, fruition. I knew it was sort of a period piece.
Yeah, and the two actors that I wasn't expecting to find are Richard Kind and Paul Reiser. And Richard Kind plays the main character's father as sort of the opening scene is him having like a heart attack and sort of, and kind of
that
telling
does
his sound son.
Funny.
Telling his son that he wishes that he had chosen a different path in life.
Uh-huh.
Sort of, he didn't want to do what he did. He didn't want to marry his mom. Wanted to marry another woman.
Uh-huh.
It's very funny. Richard Kind is a great actor. Very,
you might know him as Bing Bong from Inside Out.
That's true. And the other one is Paul Reiser, who plays the kind of snob asshole main guy who runs the country club. And he's like a doctor on the he's a doctor, but he is sort of like the chairman of the country club, and he's sort of the antagonistic character for the main guy. And I like Paul Reiser, I always have.
Yeah,
but if you can imagine sort of his character from Aliens taken to sort of
the country club.
Older Paul Reiser has been kind of fun. He's on a show called Married on FX, which was not a great show.
But
he played a great sort of older guy, and it was a good role for him, and I can see him playing that. It seems
well. I've loved Paul Reiser ever since No Mad About You.
About you, sure.
I mean, that was sort of where it was always great to see him. I've really liked it. I've watched the first three episodes. There's some great bits in there. And it's another half-hour show.
Oh, okay. So, for my day off, which was yesterday, I turned to Netflix. And they have Aziz Ansari's new show, Master of None, which is a show he's doing with Dave Becky, who's one of the producers of... Dave Becky's one of the producers. And he's going to go to Louis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Alan Yang is one of the guys who's a guy from Parks and Rec, and there's other people from Parks and Rec in there. It's got a good creative pedigree.
You watched some of this too, didn't you, Dave?
I watched the first episode. I did not marathon it.
I didn't mean to. But
how long is the season?
10 episodes.
Okay,
but I started it. I fell completely in love with it and watched the whole series.
It was Aziz Mania.
You guys just saw him live, right?
Yeah, was at. He was at the Oddball Comedy Festival, which I think he was our maybe the best performer there.
He was the headliner, and he was great.
Yeah, he was great. Because Amy Sherman was there, too.
Yeah.
But I actually thought Aziz Ansari's bit was best.
I agree.
I don't know if I've seen a lot of these Ansari. What is his sort of tone? Is he...
He's sort of
observational humor.
Yeah, modern 20-something kind of... You know, he's a guy in his 30s now, but he's definitely a younger guy.
Okay.
Dating is going to show up.
He just wrote a book about modern romance, called Modern Romance, which he wrote with, like, a sociologist about dating and in the age of texting and Tinder and all this stuff. It's really funny and really interesting.
Okay.
So, I have to quick say what the opening scene is. I'm not going to say precisely what it is, because it's too dirty.
Yeah.
But... He's having sex with his girlfriend, and the condom...
Not girlfriend. One night stand.
Oh, one night stand. And the condom breaks, and a hilarious conversation ensues that includes looking up stuff on their phone.
Yep. And about whether or not she can get pregnant from this.
Yes. And there's a serious undertone to, like, sort of like, in the same way that Louis has it, but not as serious, maybe at times.
No, but this is spiritually similar to Louis, especially as it goes on.
Spiritually similar. And it was hysterical, and well, I guess it sets the tone for the show.
Yeah.
It says we're going to be talking about these things, we're going to be talking about dating, we're going to be talking about some fairly intimate subjects.
Yep. But they also, they don't get as much into it in the first episode, but in the second and later on, Aziz Ansari's parents play his parents in this.
Oh, wow.
And one of his buddies is from, I think, either Taiwan or Korea.
Okay.
And so his dad – so they're both sort of first-generation immigrant. Like their parents came over here and they were born in this country, but their parents remember the old country. Yeah. And sort of – there's a great bit in the second episode where these guys, Aziz and his buddy, are both trying to go to a movie and they're both seeing their dads.
Yeah.
And their dads, like, ask them to do a favor. And they say, no, you know, I want to go see I got to see the trailers. Or the other guy's like, I really like answering the trivia questions. And there's this flashback to all the crap their parents had to go through, all the racism and all the getting over here and to get them to this life that they get to live. And it's this great contrast of young versus old.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of – there's a lot of sort of race relations and cultural changes in America and that kind of stuff in there mixed in as well.
He babysits for two kids in the first episode.
Yes.
And they're like, what, you know, six or
seven. Yeah, they're younger kids.
They draw a picture, you know, they're like white kids. He's Middle Eastern. I don't know what
No, he's called. Indian.
He's Indian, okay. And he's like, that's nice. He's like a little bit racist. But
yeah, he's drawn completely black. Yeah,
just completely blacked, basically.
But it's really funny, but it also has an underpinning of some great character stuff. His friend, I don't remember the actor's name, the tall guy.
Yeah,
just pairing them visually is hilarious, right. But...
They're both, you know, there's something, you know that Seinfeld bit, the, you know, where he and George Costanza are like, we're not men.
We're not men, yeah.
That sort of seems to be maybe the through line of the show.
He's in his early 30s, but he hasn't figured his life out yet.
Right.
His character's name is Dev. Like, it's semi-autobiographical. He's a struggling actor in New York. He's one of the through lines is that he's in this. There's a big budget movie.
He's getting money from like a commercial he did, you know, and stuff like that.
There's a big budget movie that's sort of one of the through lines that he's trying out for that becomes a part of it. There's a little bit of that extra sort of showbiz vibe to it, but not in that. It's not in the self-indulgent way that a lot of the showbiz behind the scenes stuff can be. But it's also there's a relationship that develops later on that's sort of there's some main through lines, but there's also viewed episodically. It has stuff to say about aging, about race in America, about sex, about difference
first
in men.
First episode was marriage and kids.
There's difference between men and women. There's a great episode that focuses on that, which Aziz Ansari's stand-up bit did a really great bit on that stuff.
Nice.
It's really great. 10 episodes. Every one of them has a great point of view. It builds into one big story. It is really funny and really sweet, and I loved it. It's one of my favorite things I've seen this year.
Half hour episodes.
Yeah. Well, sometimes a little longer because it's Netflix. They don't have like commercials or anything to deal with.
Right.
But if you have Netflix, put this on. It is really great. I loved it.
I'm gonna watch some of it tonight. In fact.
Finally, one last thing I want to mention was a podcast I've been listening to. It's called Put Your Hands Together. It is a comedy podcast co-hosted by Cameron Esposito and her fiance Rhea Butcher.
Okay.
You may have seen Cameron Esposito on At Midnight. They're lesbian comedians, and they tend to bring out a lot of gay and lesbian comedians. They are, I believe, in San Francisco, but it's a – or maybe – no, they're in L.A.,
okay.
I think. But they're – it's a comedy show they do every week, and they basically just tape the comedy show.
Oh, okay.
So it is comedians trying out material – and sometimes
like in front of a live audience, like improv shows.
Yeah, but it's not improv. It is stand-up.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I meant stand-up.
Yeah, but it is that. So they host it. They'll do their little bits, and then they'll bring comedians up. And it's people you may have heard of, along with comedians you won't have. Mm-hmm. And it's like a real comedy club. So sometimes you'll get people trying out material, and it'll flop a little bit. But sometimes you get some people doing some really funny stuff.
Huh?
And
is it literally just the audio of the show, or is there any behind-the-scenes stuff?
Occasionally. Okay, this is what I noticed. The last show they did, Cameron Esposito wasn't there. They had a guest moderator or guest host. And he did interviews with two of the big comedians who have Anthony Jeselnik, who also was at Oddball,
yep.
And somebody else who are like Comedy Central guys who are clearly working on stuff.
Yep.
And rather than play their set, they played an interview with the comedian and the host. And I wonder if that was a contractual thing, like their stuff can't go on the podcast, so they have to do an interview with them.
Maybe.
And then they jump back to where they were. But mostly it's just the comedians doing their bits. If you like stand-up comedy, especially if you like the show The Meltdown on Comedy Central, this is just a great little stand-up comedy podcast every week, and I've been really enjoying listening to it.
I'll check out an episode or two, add it to my walking podcast.
Yeah, I recommend it. It's really funny. It's really interesting, and I love seeing sort of stand-up working on their bits, and that's what this is for. That about wraps it up for us this week. That was a lot of stuff. Big comics week, big news week.
Hopefully you made it through.
Hopefully you made it through. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe!
And that'll wrap it up for us this week. As always, you can drop us email with topic suggestions, things you want us to hear about, or just comments on the podcast at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at roguesgallery. Check us out on Facebook. Check out our website at www.roguesgallerytx.com. Check us out on Instagram at roguesgallerytx. And if you want to help us out, go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and a little review. We'd very much appreciate it. And we will be back next week.